It's time for the one show that takes you where others won't. Out into the wilderness, past the frontiers of what you thought was possible. With your own personal guide, The Pilgrim, on the 405.
Well, welcome to Pilgrim Talks here on this a little bit cloudy day here in Laguna Beach. And cloudy all the way up to Redondo Beach and back today on a trip. You know, last week we were talking about crowdfunding. We talked to the founders of Crowdfunding Live, and because of, you know, when we talked to Aggie Coben, what we found out was that there's a lot of interest in this whole new way of capital formation. Aggie invited OC Talk Radio and Pilgrim Talks up to the conference last Saturday. We went, had a good time, interviewed people, and got to know some folks that are very excited about the possibilities of crowdfunding. And one of those is Howard Leonhardt. And so I invited Howard to spend a little time with us today. Howard is a fascinating person. He's an inventor, serial entrepreneur. He didn't have a couple of products. He's got 21 patents for products for treating cardiovascular and heart diseases. And he's founded 21 companies, and most of them majority funded by his own venture firm, Leonhardt Ventures. So I wanted Howard to come on and talk to us a little bit about what he sees as crowdfunding possibilities for capital formation, especially for small businesses. So welcome, Howard.
Yeah, thanks, Will.
Tell us a little bit about what you're seeing about crowdfunding.
Will, crowdfunding is extremely exciting for small businesses. You know, in the past, the only way you could legally raise capital is primarily making an offering to people that had more than $1 million in assets, excluding their home. And the law said that you had to have a substantial pre-existing relationship with those people. You couldn't advertise to reach them as strangers. The law did have a provision for up to 35 non-accredited investors. Accredited is the term for having more than $1 million in assets, excluding your home. But attorneys would guide you against doing that because the legal filings and the paperwork needed to do that and the chance of litigation was so much higher. So until this new Jobs Act was passed and signed into law April 5th, it was really difficult for people that were not in the golf country club circuit to raise capital. People like me, I was a son of a mechanic and a seamstress, and when I first heard about that law when I was starting my first company, I said, I don't know a single person with over $1 million in assets at that time. I was in my 20s, and so many other people are in that same boat. So this law is incredible. It now opens up. You can use general solicitation. You can sell to anybody, an unlimited number of non-accredited investors. You can raise up to $1 million, and the paperwork requirements are substantially less than the previous law.
So let's unpack what that means. For a small business person starting off with a great idea, has a business plan, wants to start raising money. Previously, people would say, well, you need to go to your friends and family. And you know, if you're talking to my family, they're borrowing from me. I'm not borrowing from them, right?
That is correct.
So you know, they people would say, go talk to friends and family. And like you said, that's a very difficult thing for many folks. Now, with crowdfunding, what we're talking about is being able to put an opportunity on the internet, on a crowdfunding portal, and begin to solicit, to be open to people to participate at all levels of investment, right?
That's correct, Will. I don't think people have really digested the transformational change that this is going to bring. I think we're about to enter an unprecedented era of innovation and economic growth. I think that this really is the best possible thing we could have done to stimulate job creation. This is going to allow people to pursue their dreams, and just the activity that it starts by a lot of people working every day to bring new ideas forward is perhaps the catalyst that we've been looking for to get out of this recession. And again, the law allows you to raise up to $1 million. There are a bunch of requirements. I'm not sure if you want me to go through them all, but you're not allowed to just advertise openly. You advertise that you're making an offering. You can describe that you're offering shares. But for details, you have to direct people to a registered crowdfunding portal or to a registered broker-dealer. but a number of great organizations are setting up to be portals. And there is some filing requirements. You do have to describe what you're going to do with the use of proceeds. For the valuation of the company, you have to describe what method of valuation you use to determine the valuation so that the investors have a fair shake in understanding the risk. And there are a number of other protections for the investor. It isn't as Wild West as some critics who haven't looked into it fully have expressed. There's a check and balance that the Congress put into the law, and now the SEC is reviewing the law. Right now we're in the SEC rulemaking period. So the law was signed August 5th. And by the way, unbelievable bipartisan support for this. The crowdfunding portion of the Jobs Act passed through the House 407-17, and the other provision of the law called the Small Capital Company Capital Formation Act passed 521-1. Every Republican, every Democrat in the state of California voted yes on both of those bills that have become part of the Jobs Act and were signed into law. The president supported it as well. You know, we always complain about gridlock and not getting things done in Washington. Well, here was an instance where the president, the Republicans, and the Democrats pulled together and did what was right. And the reason it was so overwhelmingly passed is when small companies like myself came forward and told our stories about how costly it was to raise capital, how difficult it was to raise capital. The reason I got involved, Will, is that I took my company, BioHeart, public back in 2008. BioHeart is stock symbol BHRT. It's a company that utilizes adult muscle stem cells to treat heart failure. And we did a $6.5 million offering to finish our phase 2-3 clinical trials. And it cost us $4.8 million to raise that $6.5 million. And when I got through with that process and saw, you know, how costly it was, that's when I started to get involved with the reform. And I was so delighted to be there in the White House Rose Garden on April 5th, standing a few feet from the president when he signed it into law. It was a great day.
Mm. Well, congratulations and thanks for your help. Let's talk a little bit about what a company right now. Well, let's talk about who would be candidates for this. Now, they could go up and take a look at what's going on with crowdfunding at a place like Kickstarter, right? That would be a good place to kind of, if they're not aware of what this is, a CEO or a CFO could go up and take a look at Kickstarter as a kind of a model of how to get people involved in your project, right?
Kickstarter is one of the companies that have led the way as a portal for non-equity-based crowdfunding. So still today, equity crowdfunding or selling securities or shares of your company is not legal yet. It's in the SEC rulemaking period, which is 270 days after April 5th. So that means December 31st, provided they stay within the congressional mandate for the time period for them to finish their rulemaking, then it will become fully legal. But what Kickstarter is doing is offering perks and pre-selling products. The most famous Kickstarter case was the Pebble Watch company, which raised close to $7 million recently, and they did that by pre-selling watches that they were hoping to manufacture. And so they took the money in advance and then using the money that they got for advance payments to actually put together the manufacturing operations and make the delivery of the watches. But that's different from selling equity. So things are going to change dramatically. Kickstarter will likely be, you know, one of the companies that transitions to equity crowdfunding. But, Will, I'm, you know, very involved in that area, and I know that many other portals are setting up to be focused on equity crowdfunding, and I believe that there's going to be some substantial differences between the Kickstarter perk model and how those portals are designed and how the equity crowdfunding portals are designed. There are some fundamental differences between the two, but Kickstarter gives you an idea of what a crowdfunding portal will look like.
All right. So if I'm a company, that has a project, and you know, I need somewhere between $750,000 and $1 million to move this. A good plan. I've got a good market study. What things should I be doing right now to look forward to the time? And you know. Also, let's let's posit that I've tried to raise funding with banks. I've tried venture capital. I've tried a number of different ways, and I haven't been able to do it. So now I'm primed for this new possibility. What should I be doing between now and the end of this year to be prepared for crowdsourcing equity funding?
Well, the law has laid out some very specific requirements to be able to prepare for crowdfunding. You do have to have a business plan and description of your business. You do have to provide financial information on your business, and that likely will include in providing tax returns. And there are different requirements for under $100,000. The CFO and the CEO just signs off on the financials. If you're raising less than $100,000, $100,000 to $500,000, you have to have reviewed financials. $500,000 to $1 million, you have to have audited financials. And you have to describe the intended use of the funds, the target offering amount, of course, the price of the securities. And related to the price of securities, you have to establish what method of valuation you use to establish that price. And, the buyers either buy into that or not, but you have to fully disclose that and give the rationale of why you're pricing your shares, what you're pricing them at. And the portals, of course, will have some opportunity to participate in that. The portals do not have to list any company that comes to them. So a portal obviously wants to stay in business, so they want to have a successful meeting of the investors and the entrepreneurs. So they're going to vet in out term sheets that they don't feel are fair to list on their site. The SEC may require additional requirements. That's what this rulemaking period is about. But one thing is for sure, you do have to disclose the ownership and the capital structure of the business, including the terms of each class of the issuer's stock. And you have to clearly communicate risk of minority ownership and risk of investment in this type of investment. Many of the portals are going to require that the investors go through a mini course, which basically clearly communicates to them the risk involved with investing in startups, and suggests portfolio management, which most venture capital funds, they don't put all of their funds into one investment. They spread them out because with startups, unfortunately, there's a high likelihood of failure amongst them.
Now, this is not just for startups, though, is it?
That's a very good point. It is not just for startups. Anybody seeking to raise $1 million for any purpose will have this as a tool.
Could be a public company, couldn't it?
It could be, yes.
Okay. So any company that wants to raise up to $1 million, this is a way to do that. Now, do you think, as you look at the SEC requirements, do you think this is going to be onerous requirements that are going to cost a lot?
I think they're coming to a pretty fair balance, and I don't think the SEC is going to substantially change what Congress already passed, which is under $100,000, just the CFO and the CEO sign off on the statements. No matter what you do, you cannot commit fraud and lie to people, so there'll be many protections in place for that. And the portals, I know that many of the portals are requiring the companies that issue with them to go through fraud detection software, and there's also the opportunity to go through business plan analysis. Again, the portals want to develop a reputation of providing good service and good companies to invest in, so they're going to do a little bit of the work above and beyond the law to make sure that the companies they list on their portal are pretty good companies.
Okay. All right, so not onerous to apply. Probably not going to take some sort of a broker or a lot of legal advice or other intermediaries, right?
It was clear the intent of the law was to reduce the cost and complexity of raising capital at that level. And keep in mind, Will, that with the Jobs Act, it wasn't just crowdfunding, but it's probably appropriate to mention that the other part of the act, the Small Company Capital Formation Act, also known as Section 201 for 506 offerings. 506 is the typical way that companies do private placements now. Well, the law also changed that. And before, You could not advertise to the public when you're doing a 506 exemption offering. Now you can do that. You can increase from 500 shareholders to 2,000. It used to be that if you had more than 500 shareholders, you legally had to file to be a public company. Now they've moved that to 2,000. And companies no longer will have to rely on the word of mouth or people whom the company has pre-existing relationship to reach out to new investors. They'll be able to advertise and to participate in angel networks. So not only did the first $1 million modify, but the 506 goes up to $50 million raises. It does require more legal filings and more conditions. And keep in mind, the 506 is meant to be directed towards accredited investors. So that's that group that I told you about of over $1 million in assets, excluding their home. So that has not changed. But for the first million, you can go to unlimited number of unaccredited investors under $1 million in assets. And then from $1 million to $50 million, there's been some liberalization of the laws to reach out to accredited investors. So across the board, including what they now call an IPO ramp and a mini IPO, these are other provisions of the Jobs Act which make going public less costly. For instance, small companies that go public now are exempt from Sarbanes-Oxley and all those costly requirements for the first 3 years that they're listed as a public company, as long as they're still a small public company.
Wow. Well, there's a dramatic loosening up of requirements to get to small investors for capital formation. Is that what I'm hearing?
It really is true. I believe that this was an incredible set of laws to pass through, and that it is going to serve its purpose to spur an enormous growth of job creation. It's exactly what the country needed, and the reason it passed 521-1 is that everybody who heard the argument and understood the situation wanted to vote yes, because it just plain makes sense.
All right, so we have the law that's if the SEC puts its rules together in accordance with the law, then we have the opportunity. How will we get the word out to people? It's not coming through SBA. What's the communication channel, do you think?
That's an excellent segue to something I wanted to mention. A number of us have volunteered to serve with a new organization called Startup California. It's actually a region of the Startup America Partnership, which is a public-private partnership that was initiated by President Obama, Steve Case, the former chairman and CEO of AOL, the Case Foundation, the Kauffman Foundation, and a number of other organizations, including Microsoft and American Express and the New York Stock Exchange, that have all gotten behind this initiative. And one of the purposes of that initiative is to get the word out. And by the way, this is being phased out. The first part that's going to go full into effect is the 506 offering changes that I mentioned for raising more than $1 million up to $50 million to accredited investors. That takes effect fully on July 4th. So we're only days away from that major portion of the legislation going fully into effect. Right now, today, in fact, Will, in Orange County at 6 p.m. at the Microsoft store at 333 Bristol Street in Costa Mesa, there's a Startup California Orange County launch event this evening from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m.
So there's at the Microsoft store in Costa Mesa, there's a Startup California meeting, right?
And it happens to be taking place tonight. And later this week, on Saturday, is our major launch for the state of California and here in Los Angeles, which is going to take place Saturday, June 16th, from 5 to 9 p.m. at the Cross Campus Center in Santa Monica. But again, right now, today, in Orange County, and I know that you have many Orange County listeners, head over to the Microsoft store. It's at the South Coast Plaza, 333 Bristol Street in Costa Mesa, and this is the occasion of the Startup California Orange County launch event. And at that meeting, there will be experts in the Jobs Act and crowdfunding.
Wow. So is Microsoft going to be doing that several times?
Well, Microsoft is one of the national sponsors for the Startup America Partnership, but actually that's just that they were just kind enough to provide their location for this event today.
And, all right, so there's going to be events like that that are going to be continuing to be offered for people to come in and find out what they can do. What other ways are small businesses going to hear about this?
Well, for those who don't have the ability to go to a meeting, on startupcalifornia.org, we have a special page directed to the Jobs Act. There's a banner ad on the very front page that scrolls through, and when it comes up and says Jobs Act, just click on that, and there's a very comprehensive table that shows the five major elements of the Jobs Act and what that means in particular to small companies trying to raise capital.
Okay. So we want to send people to startupcalifornia.org.
Yes. By the way, Will, you know, for startups that and small companies that sign up on startupcalifornia.org, there's about $10,000 of free goodies given by the sponsors to everybody that signs up, including, you mentioned Microsoft. Microsoft is providing the entire Office suite of software to startups that sign up through the program.
Wow. And there's also a Startup LA, a Startup Orange County, and Riverside County on Startup California, right?
That's true. It's all we divided California into major regions and have teams in each of those regions that help to bring forward all of the purposes of the Startup America Partnership, which is basically to help startups get the help they need to create jobs, not just startups,
okay,
but companies that are growing.
All right. So what do you talk about a large number of jobs being created. Can you tell me a little more about how you see that happening?
Well, you know, capital formation for small business is fundamental. Anybody that's tried to start and develop a business knows that very well. And because of a number of factors that all relate to the recession, it has become increasingly difficult for great firms with great teams with a solid business plan to raise capital. And this Jobs Act and all the initiatives of the Startup America Partnership are designed to try to reduce the cost and complexity and to guide companies through the process to be able to get the capital they need to follow through on their business plan. And in that process, jobs are created. David Weald, who was one of the experts that testified in front of Congress, he was the formerly vice chairman of NASDAQ. And like myself, he recognized that the capital markets had become broken as far as serving small companies. Intel, as an example, way back was an $8 million IPO that we all know turned into a blockbuster success. Microsoft was a small IPO when it first came out. But today, if you're doing under a $50 million offering, the public markets just do not work, or at least until this Jobs Act was passed. And when he testified in front of Congress, he gave a report that was backed up by five different economists working for Grant Thornton that assembled data. And his report said that because of the defects in the capital markets for small companies, 23 million jobs were lost over the last decade. And the inverse of that, or reverse of that, is that if we corrected those things, 23 million jobs could be created. And obviously that's a very big number, and we all have hope that that prediction comes through. But I believe that we're about to see a great economic boom that relates to getting small companies funded.
So you think that there's that much pent-up, not just desire for capital, but that many pent-up jobs sitting there waiting for that to happen?
I really do. I mean, human nature hasn't changed during this recession. People still want houses and cars, and something has to spur the recovery in the right direction. You know, capitalism is prone to sentiment, and in the past decade, people got negative, and they started getting scared about making investments, scared about making purchases, and the feeling that growth was occurring wasn't there, and that self-perpetuated a downward spiral, which we call the recession. There are many other factors, and it's quite complicated. But one thing is true, is that people still have needs, wants, and desires, and entrepreneurs are still willing to step forward to fulfill those needs, wants, and desires. And I do believe that a very productive use of capital is to fund people who are energized to follow their dreams and to create new companies with new innovations. And I think one of the byproducts of this crowdfunding is that when you make a small investment, you're maybe more apt to take a bet on an early innovation and try more things and allow more things to be tried. And then all of us who have been innovators, we know that the innovator's mantra is try a lot of things and keep what works. And a lot of things are going to be tried now that never had a chance to be tried. So I think not only are we heading towards, you know, major job creation, but we're heading towards major innovation. Innovations that have never gotten off the ground before are now going to get off the ground and get funded. And keep in mind that politicians and nonprofit charitable organizations have been using crowdfunding for a long time. I think in this particular political campaign, as an example, President Obama has raised nearly $100 million in under $200 donations. Now companies are going to be able to tap into that same power of multiple small investments across many people instead of just a few as had happened in the past. And that's quite powerful.
Well, that's tremendous. That's tremendous. Well, Howard, can you stick around after the break here, and let's talk a little bit more about the California Stock Exchange that you're starting up.
Thank you very much. I will.
Okay. Well, let's take a break and let's hear from our sponsors.
I'm Al Strauss with Sandler Training. Talk to you about rule number 38. The problem the prospect brings you is never the real problem. When people have heard this rule and thought about it a bit, if they've been in sales for more than a few months, they almost always say, well, that's obvious. I've had lots and lots of prospects that told me what they wanted, I showed them what they wanted, and they didn't buy it. So it seems that it would be obvious. The problem is, most folks don't understand it, and you get in the middle of the conversation, and here's a prospect who's interested in something, you've got the something, and you just show up. And what you really need to learn how to do is ask a bunch more questions, because frankly, in most cases, the prospect doesn't even understand what the real problem is. And so if you ask three or four more questions about what they claim they need or are looking for or want, you're going to discover that it morphs. It changes, sometimes dramatically. What they end up needing is perhaps even diametrically opposed to what they originally said they were looking for. So ask the questions. Don't take the first thing they give you. Dive down into the real issues, and you're going to have yourself a much better day selling to this prospect.
It takes 12 years to create a graduate. It takes about the same time to create a dropout. And at the end of the day, the difference between a child becoming one or the other could be you. So United Way is asking you to make a pledge. Tutor a child who needs help. Mentor a kid who needs someone on their side. Volunteer to read to children. Because when a child advances, we all advance. Be a reader, tutor, or mentor. Give, advocate, volunteer. Live United. Take the pledge now at liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
And now back to Will and his guest.
Well, we've been talking with Howard Leonhardt, the founder, chairman, and CEO of 21 companies in the biomedical field. And we're talking particularly about this whole new possibility for crowdfunding, especially crowdfunding around equity offers from small companies to raise up to $1 million online with low registration requirements and things like that. So Howard has begun to put together a way of making this even more helpful to small businesses in the California Stock Exchange. So tell us about that venture, Howard.
Well, the the origin of the California Stock Exchange goes back to what I mentioned before, is taking BioHart public and the high cost of making the offering on NASDAQ, and then the difficulties in remaining successful as a public company. So basically, we collected notes from all the entrepreneurs and companies that had gone public and had a tough time in the process, and put them into one bundle and are going to the SEC to ask their permission to start a new stock exchange that falls in between doing friends and family and angel financing and VC financing and being a NASDAQ public company. Even great companies today, it takes about 9 years before they likely qualify for a NASDAQ IPO, and they generally will be raising $50 million or more to make it worthwhile with all the expenses and difficulties in doing a public offering. Some of that's going to change with the new laws, but NASDAQ is set up a little bit different to, you know, better serve companies that are just a little bit larger, and there's a great place for that. What we want to do with the California Stock Exchange is basically fill that gap between year three and year four, when your friends and family and angel money may be running out, in a year nine IPO on NASDAQ. If we were baseball, we'd be the AAA. We want to be a minor league that feeds to the major league. We don't want to take over what NASDAQ is doing or the New York Stock Exchange is doing, but we want to fill the gap in between. And it has a human element to it, in that when you found startups and you recruit people to join you, you usually recruit them to take a lower salary, a lot of stock options, and they can do that with their families for 2-3 years, maybe 4 years. But if you go longer than that, you start stressing out their families, and they may be interested to jump to another company. So there needs to be some limited liquidity, because 9 years of waiting before the stock that you're working for gets any kind of value is just too long. People can't wait that long. So we're trying to provide limited liquidity, but not quite the liquidity of NASDAQ. And we have one of the provisions in the California Stock Exchange that if somebody puts in a sell order for a stock and it's 10% below the current trading price, that a notice is given to the company, and the company would be given up to 90 days to find a blocked buyer for those shares. That provides price stability that is not currently available. Will, I often give the example of everybody lives in a neighborhood that has a house. And could you imagine if one person in your neighborhood wanted to sell their house in one day and put it on the market? Let's say the average house in your neighborhood is $1 million, and they start in the morning at $1 million, but they don't find an immediate buyer. And by 4 o'clock in the afternoon, they dump the house for $200,000. If that's a stock, every other house in that neighborhood comes down to $200,000, whether they like it or not. And even though every other house in that neighborhood maybe would have never wanted to sell less than $1 million because they know the value of their house, but because one person panic sells, that's what happens with stocks right now that are lightly traded, is that a couple panic sellers can bring the whole rest of the group down. And we've built into our California Stock Exchange a provision to protect against that. And I won't go down the long list, but that's just one good example of changes that we're making in this filing with the SEC for a new stock exchange that can be better for small companies.
So Is the California Stock Exchange going to work exclusively with crowdfunding opportunities?
The only connection is that crowdfunding would likely provide a feeder network for companies coming on the California Stock Exchange. So crowdfunding would be at a much lower level. So we would expect the company coming into the California Stock Exchange would have done crowdfunding, would have done some angel investor rounds, would have done an accredited 506 offering, and then we're the next step after that. We don't see that a lot of companies are going to jump right from the $1 million crowdfunding to be on the California Stock Exchange, but that's a first step in that direction. We would guess that a company starting out would take about 3 to 4 years to be properly ready to list on the California Stock Exchange. So we're trying to fill that gap between year three and year nine. We're not trying to say that companies just formed can go right to the California Stock Exchange. That crowdfunding and the other tools available should serve those companies for the first 3 years.
And so on the California Stock Exchange, this would be an IPO that they would be doing.
It would fit into the new Jobs Act, which is called the mini IPO. So we would be doing public offerings, and there would be publicly traded stocks, but we're actually requesting for for some new rules. As a private exchange, we can create some rules that are above and beyond the law. We cannot contradict the law. But, for instance, on NASDAQ, it says that brokers are only allowed to make a 7% commission. That's not a law set by the SEC. That's just a voluntary requirement of anybody participating in a NASDAQ exchange. And so we're coupling together a number of private initiatives that basically say when you come to this exchange, you agree to play by these rules, which one of those rules would be that if you go to sell your stock, you might have to wait 90 days to get the stock trade placed. So it's kind of in between being private, where you have almost no liquidity, and being public on NASDAQ, where you could sell your shares in one day if you want to. We're kind of going to fill that gap in between, and there's a great need for that.
Mm-hmm. Who are you working with on the California Stock Exchange initiative?
I'm getting advice from a number of people. John Katovich, who is the legal counsel for the Boston Stock Exchange, is providing advice. Delilah Panano, who was the U.S. liaison for the Toronto Venture Exchange. I mentioned David Weil before. He's officially an informal advisor that we're working to convert into a formal advisor, but I got to say that he's really helped out because he's provided as former vice chairman of NASDAQ, he knows the process very well, and I've listened very carefully to him, and he's given me a lot of time. So we're pulling together some people that really know stock exchanges, and we have Stephen Kahn, a Series 24 broker who's an advisor to us, and the list goes on. But we're pulling together some really good people, but the people we're listening to the most in this process are entrepreneurs, the creators, the job creators who have run into the difficulties in the existing system, and we're taking notes on how we could have a stock exchange that better serves them. We're also listening to investors on what they would like to see in an improved stock exchange, and we're packaging that all together and hope to have it launched in the near future. It depends on the SEC time to review our application.
Uh-huh. Now, are you in Southern California, or do you spend your time in Northern California, or do you split it between?
I'm very lucky to live in both places, but I spend most of my time in Santa Monica, where our home base office is, and one of our Leonhardt Ventures businesses is Leonhardt Vineyards, which has a small winery and vineyards up in near Healdsburg, California.
Uh-huh. So tell us a little bit about the companies that you have. What's been like to start them? What routes have you used?
Well, most of my life I've worked in the biotech, medtech industry, and our first company we bootstrapped all the way. We didn't have any cash, and I went to go raise that capital, and I didn't know anybody with over $1 million in assets. And when it said you could sell to 35 non-accredited investors, well, the 35 people closest to me didn't necessarily have lots of money to spare to give to their buddy that was starting a high-risk early enterprise. I was lucky to get 1,000 from 35 people, and 35,000 total is not a lot to build a medical device company, or what we ended up developing, which was implantable stent grafts for repairing aortic aneurysms without surgery. So we had to do it the long way and the hard way. So we did it step by step, and we bootstrapped, and it took many, many, many years. And we started off just wholesaling products, then we private labeled products, then we got involved with contract manufacturing, and then finally we were able to develop the products that we wanted to originally develop. But we founded in 1986, and we didn't reach our goals until 1998. It took us 12 years of working around the clock to make it happen.
But now, you have 21 companies now, right?
Yes. You know, most of the capital that Leonhardt Ventures and the Angel Network has pulled together has gone into just a few of those companies, particularly BioHeart, the company that utilizes adult stem cells to treat heart failure. We recently published in the American Heart Journal our Phase 2-3 results from the MARVEL trial, double-blinded randomized trial. And the patients that received our MyoCell, or adult muscle stem cells, they improved 95.7 meters in exercise capacity over the placebo patients who received injections, but it was a placebo injection, and those patients declined minus 4 meters. Both patients' groups received optimal drugs. There's about $8 billion spent each year on heart failure drugs, and they provide about a minus 4 decline in exercise capacity every 6 months. the drug companies would point out that the $8 billion is a bargain because if you don't take those drugs, you'll decline about minus 20. But with the stem cells, our BioHeart MyoCell, we were able to show that the patients improved 91.7 meters or 95.7 meters over placebo, and that allowed them to have a higher quality of life, where prior to that, they couldn't carry in a bag of groceries from the car to the house and without feeling like a normal person would feel after running a mile full out. They would be out of breath. And after the treatment, they were able to live a normal quality of life.
And is that on the market now?
No, we're still in the final stages of clinical trials. We have about 135 patients to go before we could qualify for a BLA panel meeting with the FDA to request approval.
And what are you projecting will be the time when it will be available?
That's a tough one, and you know, our lawyers always advise against trying to speculate on things that are out of our control. But the estimate that we've publicly shared is that probably about 2 years would be the right answer to get through the entire process.
Mm-hmm. Good. Well, good. Well, that's been a long venture, but certainly going to make a major contribution. What do you see in the marketplace right now? What kinds of things do you see strong and worth people getting involved in?
Well, here in California, there's an emergence of doing well by doing good. So, so many companies are coming forward that offer healthy lifestyles, offer improvements to the environment, clean technology for fuels. Here in California, we're seeing a lot of that. It's really a special state, this state of California. And of all the states in the United States, there's a greater appetite for funding, emerging, and starting business than any other state. Last year, even though it's a recession, California outpaced the rest of the nation in investing in startup businesses. All other 49 states combined did not match with California as far as funding startup businesses.
Wow. You know, I have not heard that. I wonder why we don't hear more about that.
The press often covers the stories that are negative, and that's a positive one. But by the way, Will, you know, in this process of getting ready for crowdfunding, we've been doing some market research, and one of the things I can share with your audience is a company called Emerging Firms out of San Diego shared with us at a recent meeting a slide that showed that they surveyed 500 people in California about their interest in crowdfunding, and the data point they shared is that people that make more than $75,000 a year, that 74% of them expect to participate in crowdfunding, and the average size of their investment will be $2,300. If that holds true across the nation, we're looking at a new bolus of trillions of dollars entering into funding new businesses and job creation that currently is not there. This is amazing, actually, that high a percentage of people are interested to participate.
Hmm. Yeah, that is astounding. Astounding. What kind of? Where are the groups of people that should be getting more publicity? What are some of the things that Pilgrim Talks, the Pilgrim on the 405, might do?
Well, obviously, my interest is slanted towards biotech and medtech, where I spent most of my career. And you know, I think we're in a very special time. I mentioned the stem cell therapy. We've all heard about stem cells, and there was the bill passed in California for $3 billion of funding, and some people are disappointed that there hasn't been an immediate results, but I can tell you from a firsthand position of seeing patients treated with stem cells that it works. It isn't perfect yet. It doesn't work 100% of the time. We're kind of like the early days of aviation where, unfortunately, and we're not to where we hope to be in the future, but there's enough evidence already that it works, that if we keep working on optimizing the therapies, the great goals that you heard at the beginning of the request for funding stem cell therapies, I believe are going to come true. And we've had some patients that have told us that we absolutely, completely changed their life by treating them with our stem cell therapy.
Well, I was just speaking with a friend of mine today who is here at City of Hope, and he's going through the chemo part. He called it his chemo week as a precursor to stem cell replacement next week.
It's a special time to be alive, and, you know, we all have been suffering through this recession over these last years, but I think that we almost have a perfect storm ready to go in the other direction. We've taken some steps. Governor Brown, I have to commend him on really taking some steps to bring spending into check, yet he's a compassionate guy. We actually, as an organization, endorsed Meg Whitman when the race was going on, but I have to admit I'm really impressed with what Governor Brown has done. He's not a business person. He's not necessarily an entrepreneur, and he's focused more on managing the budget, and I think he's done maybe a better job than anybody could have done in doing that with the experience that he brings. He's the first, only governor in the country that's approaching 12 years of experience in the job, and it shows in his ability to work with the legislature. But getting that spending in check, and now combined with this new bolus of funds through the Jobs Act going into new companies, the two things put together, I think, are setting us up for a great economic boom. I think California is going to lead the nation out of the recession, and I think the U.S. is going to lead the world out of the recession. And I'm very optimistic about the next years that we're heading into.
Well, that's wonderful. What companies would you suggest might companies that are doing well and doing good? Now, how did you put that? Companies that are.
Well, I think that you know, one of the things that California brings to the table, and we didn't talk about it before, but with the California Stock Exchange, the founding board believes in this principle of a new age of capitalism, conscious capitalism, it's been called, where two elements which are going to be highly encouraged with the California Stock Exchange. One is local investing, and one of the reasons we're doing that is we believe in it. The other is that when we did a survey asking people that have not participated in investing in small companies in the past, what it would take to get them to do so forward, the top thing on that list was local investing. When we brought up that subject, people said, I believe in that. I want my investment dollars to go into my own community, to make where I live better, to create jobs where I live. And we're going to go out of our way to facilitate local investing through the California Stock Exchange. The other is the social good element. And we're, as a private exchange, we can decide to accept or not accept companies that apply to be listed with us. And we've decided that in the application process, we're going to require that the company demonstrate a social good mission. Now, it doesn't mean that their product has to totally be a clean tech product or a social good product in itself. It could be making pizzas. But if they express that they're giving back to the community in other forms by doing that, and we're going to list them. And people in other parts of the country who just care about profit return on their investment, they're going to think that our stock exchange is a little bit leaning to the left and a little bit silly, but so be it. And one of the reasons we want to do this is we think that a lot of people have gotten kind of tired of the other stock exchanges where the only thing that seems to matter is profit return on investment and nothing else seems to matter. And we know that there's a lot of people that would like a place that they could go to where they could feel better about where their money is going and get a return at the same time.
Have you met David Corton?
I have not. Oh, did you say Amy Cortese?
David Corton, Korten.
He wrote
a book called The Great Turning and Agenda for a New Economy.
Now that you mentioned it, I'll look him up.
Yeah, I'll send you some information on him. He He has a magazine called Yes, an online magazine. You know, let's take a look at that book together. I've read it, and a lot of the things you're talking about, he talks about. He talks about regionalization of financial institutions. He talks about regionalization of agriculture, so we're not spending as much of our resources on transporting food around the globe. Very interesting. Some very interesting ideas that he's talking about that seem to me are coming to fruition in things like the California Stock Exchange, like crowdfunding, especially if that crowdfunding has a local direction to it.
Well, one of the things about the California Stock Exchange is we're directing towards real investment, and by making local investing the focus point, it allows for human relationships to exist. We're encouraging entrepreneurs and investors to come to local meetings that we'll be organizing, particularly in the state of California, but not only limited to the state of California. And we believe that the humanization of the process of investing, the fact that the investors are actually going to be investors, meaning that they're buying into the management and the business plan, and that they're going to expect to wait to get the returns. If they want to day trade or short trade, they can go to other markets to do that. We're not going to allow short trading, so you cannot bet against a company on our stock market, and we're not going to allow day trading. If they want to do that, they can go to the other exchanges to do that. We want people who want to feel good about what they're doing with their money. Sure, they want to return. They worked hard for their money, and they want to return, but we also want an element that they can feel that they're doing something for their community, and they can feel that at least we provide a platform for social good investing to have a better chance than maybe in the other markets.
David Corton, the title of his last book was Agenda for a New Economy from Phantom Wealth to Real Wealth, and on page 33 he's got a chart that talks about the difference between Wall Street capitalism versus Main Street markets. And when I look at this, I think this describes the California Stock Exchange. For example, the dominant driver, he says, of Wall Street capitalism is making money. For the Main Street markets, it's creating livelihoods. Now, that's what you've been talking about for the last hour. I didn't hear you talking about making millions of dollars, which you might well do, but what I heard you talking about is creating jobs. He says one of the defining activities, Wall Street capitalism is using money to make money for those who have money versus the Main Street markets employing available resources to meet the needs of the community. And he goes on with about 15 different areas that he's comparing Wall Street capitalism and Main Street markets. I'll send this to you this afternoon, this chart, and maybe that'll be something we can talk about later.
Thank you. It sounds like there's some common elements there.
Yeah, I think what I've been talking to. Remember Pat. Pat was up at the conference. Has worked with 44,000 small businesses. She was on the platform with you. Sue Malone.
Yeah, she does microloans.
Right. And what I'm thinking that we're going to do down here is I think we're going to put together a conference and bring in a fellow that I've interviewed from the East Coast who is an innovator. Bring him in and let him spend some time with people to help them to come up with new ideas. He's got some systems for innovation that I think would be very interesting. And then follow that up with maybe having you down here to talk and also Sue Malone to talk about, you know, how you get funding for your ideas once you get them put together. And then talk about, you know, the next step is going to be selling those ideas, selling the products and the services. I mean, you've got to move into that. But just helping people move through that whole process. But how is that different from entrepreneurship?
It really isn't different. I think most great entrepreneurs, they focus on doing something well and understand that doing something well for society, the rewards are a byproduct of doing something well. And the truly sustainable businesses can only remain in business if they continue to do something good. these tactics of short trading and they are short-lived and do not necessarily contribute to a sustainable enterprise. And I think that we are moving to an era where in the workplace and just in life, people are looking for more meaning and purpose in what they do. And that's in all aspects of the economy. When you're a consumer, which is probably the most powerful force of all in an economy, the choices that you make of how you spend your money, we hope that going forward, and we see it in California maybe more so than in other states, that people think about what they're doing with their purchases. And now we're hoping that they're going to think about what they're doing with their investments. And rewarding companies that do good things, treat their environment well, treat their employees well, provide a sense of purpose and meaning not only to the people working there, but to the people that buy their products. I think it's not only a new movement, but it's good business because people care about that. They want to have meaning and purpose, and particularly in investments, we think that if people can have meaning and purpose and a good return, they're going to prefer that over just getting a good return. And sustainability is a broad term, but you know, one way is you could go out and fish the coastline and take every bit of the fish that were there all in one instance, and you might make a big profit in the fishing business in a short time. But if you wipe out the ecosystem, it's not sustainable. Well, you know, that's an exaggerated example that people can understand. But there's many other businesses that are very similar to that, where taking a longer-term approach may not provide the short-term dramatic returns, but it's going to provide a long-term return that's more sustainable and better for everybody.
We're in for a major shift in how we're dealing with the world. I think there's been a lot of despair around the collapse, but it's voices like you that think are going to make a huge difference. And I think getting David Pensack, getting Sue Malone, getting you, maybe seeing talk to David Corton about just getting that whole movement out a little bit more forward. Well, listen, it's been wonderful talking with you, Howard. How would somebody get in touch with you, or what would you like them to do right now?
Well, startupcalifornia.org, I mentioned earlier, I'm really proud to be one of the state champions for that, and we're on our launch week now, which I mentioned. On the site, if you click on the events page, you'll see the events taking place throughout the state. The Bay Area, I know you have some listeners all the way to the north of California. They're going to launch later this week. And then the California Stock Exchange is calstockexchange.com. We do have services to help people develop their business plans and developing a customized 5-year mentoring and funding roadmap for them. We have software to help people prepare for crowdfunding, and we are ready to go with our own crowdfunding portal once the equity crowdfunding becomes effective.
Well, that's wonderful. Thank you so much for being with us today, and I'm sure we'll have many more conversations along the way.
Will, thanks for the opportunity.
Well, there you have one of the young voices standing up and saying it's a new day, new things are possible, and they're on the way. That with the Jobs Act, we have possibilities that were unheard of several years ago. With the kind of attitude that we have in California, the kind of commitment that people have to startups, to new ideas, to crowdfunding, California Stock Exchange, lots of new ideas for regionalization, making California stronger, making the national economy stronger, and actually serving people in the world, in addition to putting food on the table. So this has been a wonderful afternoon talking with Howard about the great things that he sees out there and the opportunities that are coming forward. So kudos to Howard Leonhardt. Kudos to Angie Cobran and the people, the women, putting together Crowdfunding Live. You can take a look at them at crowdfundinglive.org. This is the Pilgrim on the 405 saying it's been a great day. Look forward to talking with you next week on octalkradio.net.
You've been listening to the one show that takes you where others won't. Out into the wilderness, past the frontiers of what you thought was possible, with your own personal guide, the Pilgrim, on the 405.
OCTalkRadio.net.